asking the right questions can greatly impact your future, especially when it comes to your finances.
So if you're looking for a financial advisor you can trust, certified financial planner professionals are committed to acting in your best interest. That's why it's got to be a CFP. Find your CFP professional at letsmakeaplan.org.
In recent weeks, we've really focused on some ways that listeners can boost their income. So whether that's through starting your own side business and growing your network like Hala talked about, or when we talked with local realtor Alan about diving into investing in real estate, well, what better way to test the waters? While you are away, your home could also earn extra income.
That's right. Your empty space could be an Airbnb while you're traveling, because that's all you need to become an Airbnb host. It's a lot easier than you think, and you don't need to Airbnb your entire house. You could just host your extra spare room. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Supercharge your work decks with AI-powered Canva presentations. All you do is start with a prompt. You describe your presentation in a few words, and Canva presentations will generate captivating slides that you can then customize in seconds.
Canva presentations are designed for every workplace and every department. Whether you work in sales, marketing, HR, ops, and more, Canva presentations can generate any deck you want for work. Sales decks, marketing presentations, onboarding plans, you name it. Any department can save time on any presentation with AI.
Generate slides in seconds with Canva presentations at canva.com. Designed for work.
Welcome to How to Money. I'm Joel.
And I am Matt.
And today, we're answering your spooky listener questions.
I almost did like a howl in the background as you're saying, that to add to the ambiance. But we are going to talk through some spooky Halloween-related money questions. We've got a lot of different comments that folks chimed in with over on Facebook. We'll be getting to those. We're going to talk about how you can cut costs when it comes to funerals. We're going to talk about how you can avoid some of those financial skeletons in your closet. And Joel, you and I, we might even share our favorite scary movie during this episode.
Yeah, lots to cover. And by the way, if you're not a part of the How to Money Facebook group, go check it out. It's a great place. We've got 11,000 folks in there, and they're just helping each other all the time with their money questions. So Matt and I, you know, we are two dudes, and we love taking your money questions. We love talking about money three times a week with you. But this is a great place to go if you want like more information, or you want like a deeper dive with some of your listeners, fellow listeners. It really is a great crew, and so it's always nice to be able to tap the Facebook group for
Hive mind.
Yeah, it's nice to be able to tap them for episodes like this too. There are a lot of good suggestions, a lot of good questions in that group on this topic.
That's right, man. All right, before we introduce the beer, before we get to this episode, I wanted to share a quick little story. It's nearing the end of the month, and I was wrapping up my October expenses, right? Mm-hmm. I was closing out the budget for this month. And you know what? So one of the benefits of obviously tracking your spending, you get to see you're not immune to price increases, right? You are in touch with what it is you're spending. You can keep an eye out for different errors that may have occurred. But you also, and this is something I realized just yesterday, actually, you have the ability to essentially relive some of the expenses that you had incurred earlier that month. And in this case, so earlier in the month, we both took some long weekends. You and Emily, y'all were up in New York. Kate and I, we went out to Colorado, wanted to do some hiking. And
you got your first 14er in.
My first, yeah, that's right. And so while we were out there, I also took that as an opportunity to scratch my Tesla itch, as folks have heard me talking about here on the show. So I rented a Tesla Model 3 on Turo. It's honestly not that much more expensive than just getting a standard affordable sedan.
Yeah, the regular Corolla from Hertz or whatever.
Yeah, exactly. And I thought, okay, this is a great opportunity for me to actually try it out. It was awesome. Super cool. Dude, we had so much fun driving that thing around.
It's like an extended test drive, by the way, which is so smart.
Yeah. If you're you get to actually live with it, you know, which there's good and there's bad. Because I'll say the good is that it was a lot of fun. It wasn't FSD. It wasn't full self-driving. But, man, double-clicking that right lever and having it turn into Rainbow Road. So stinking cool. Super cool. But I tell you what is not cool was the infrastructure. Actually having to go to a supercharger, charging that thing. It's really easy, right? You just stick it in there and it just starts charging. Mm-hmm. That part's cool. But they're just not as ubiquitous as gas stations. And then, so speak, going back to my budget.
That's an understatement, by the way.
Yes, exactly. Going back to the budget, I saw, obviously, the Turo rental fee. But then there is the charge for the superchargers that we used, which, because it automatically charges the owner, which they then pass on to you as the Turo renter. And I was reminded that it cost me around $30 to charge it over the course of 3 days or so, 3-4 days of driving. And so I thought, what would those, that same number of miles that we drove, how much would it have cost with the average cost of gasoline in Colorado were we to, if we were driving?
So you ran the numbers, didn't you nerd?
Of course I ran the numbers, dude.
Can I guess?
Yes, yeah.
I'm
going to
guess gas was definitely cheaper than filling up.
It was pretty much the exact same, though. It was $30, and I was, because we didn't drive all that much.
Yeah.
But that just goes to show that the superchargers are not an affordable way to power your Tesla or your electric car. It really makes a whole lot of sense, though, if you've got those off-peak hours.
Or if you're charging at home, yeah.
Charging at home, and you've got the super off-peak hours where you're paying, like I even crunched it down to like the kilowatt hour. It was like at home, if you've got a good rate, I mean, you're paying sometimes something like 1 cent or something like that per kilowatt hour, versus it was like 25 times that, I think, when it came to the supercharger.
Yeah, the price difference between...
The convenience is nice, but you're paying a premium for it.
Price difference between charging at home and charging out at a charge point or a Tesla charger or something like that,
it's a significant
difference. And so EV owners will, if they constantly find themselves charging somewhere else besides where they live, they're going to end up spending a significant amount.
It's not going to make a whole lot of sense from the daily cost of operating a vehicle standpoint.
And that's one of the biggest selling points is like, hey, you don't have to go to the gas station. You can charge it at home and it makes it really easy. But you have to make sure that you've got enough range to where you can actually make that a reality, where you're actually doing 90%+ of your charging at your home. And by the way, a lot of people, and this is something I found out having my Leaf that had like no range, by the way, for a lot of years, is that a lot of people can get by without having even a level 2 charger. They can literally just trickle charge, which is better for their battery life over time.
And slow and steady, baby.
It works just fine for, not for everyone, but for a lot of folks.
Yeah, absolutely. And it also just reinforced that the fact that I'm probably not ever going to rent an electric vehicle when we go on vacation, because what's so great about the convenience of an electric vehicle is being able to charge it at home.
Yes.
And when you don't have a home, like, so no joke, I was driving around looking for outlets to plug into, because I thought, oh man, because we rented a condo, and I thought, if there are some outlets in the deck, as long as there's, you know, not a sign there that says no EV charging, I'm willing to pop the trunk, pull out the cord out of the frunk, I don't know wherever the charger was, and plug it up. But
they cover them up and they bolt them
shut. The deck didn't have any outlets in the entire deck. I drove the whole length of the of the deck. Kate was like, okay, we've driven enough. You're just going to have to go supercharge the thing tomorrow. But consider it, or we're going to consider it for maybe in the future for as a daily driver, if you have a home base to come back to, but certainly not for a road trip where you're going to be driving multiple days, that kind of thing.
Yeah, for sure. And I think you have to plan it out ahead of time. And I do think we're going to get a lot more charging infrastructure in the next few years. It's going to be easier I don't know that it'll bring the prices down significantly, though. And so I think if you're charging while you're out and about, it's still going to be about as expensive as it is to fill up your gas car.
Which is fine.
Yeah.
On the
occasional rare occasion.
Opportunity for you to travel out of state, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
But for the daily driver, makes a ton of sense.
For sure.
Yeah.
All right, let's move on, Matt. Let's mention the beer we're having on this episode. This one's called Social Hour. It's by Santa Fe Brewing. It's a hazy wheat ale with orange. And this is a big thanks to our friend Bob, who went to the same Nerdy Money conference we did, gave us beers last year at that Nerdy Money conference. And Bob is just one of the greatest dudes. And so he had a sack load of beer for us to bring back.
It wasn't a sack load. It was a shoebox.
It was a shoebox, like, yeah.
Not a little shoebox. I don't know how big his feet are, but it was a big shoebox.
He's got like Shaquille O'Neal size feet. And so we got a lot of great beers from Bob, and we'll be drinking
Bob.
Yeah, next few episodes. So big thanks to Bob. And by the way, if you have a personal finance question you want Matt and I to tackle on an upcoming episode, howtomoney.com/ask is the place where you can find the simple instructions to record that voice memo and send it our way. We can't wait to hear from you. Matt, let's
get to... That being said, the majority of our questions and comments today aren't actual voicemails.
Yeah.
And we wanted to reach out to Facebook.
Usually they are, but today we tapped Facebook.
It's just fun to hear other people's voice.
It really
as well,
is.
Right? I mean, folks have got to get tired of hearing us talk nonstop.
You would think, right? You would think. But no, I mean, I think it's... they tune in for a reason, right?
Yes, I think they like of course. Us. That's why they're still subscribed.
Right. No, we appreciate all you folks listening regularly. But let's get to kind of the topic.
Kick it off.
We're talking specifically about Halloween-related spooky money questions that people in our Facebook group had. And this first one comes from Danny, who says, no question here, but I hope you'll share an autumn-themed beer and tell us about some of your other seasonal faves. It's such a great time of year for craft brews. Obviously, obviously it is like the fall time. I love the seasonality of craft beer. And so Danny makes a good point. First off, I will say the hottest beer segment at this time of year is pumpkin beers. I hate pumpkin beers, Matt.
What?
I do.
You know, you like the, so what about Avery? Avery makes the Rumpkin.
Okay, the Avery is is the exception that proves the rule.
So Rumpkin, it's I can't remember.
So rum barrel aged pumpkin beer.
Pumpkin, or maybe it's like sweet potato or something like that. But obviously it's aged in rum barrels, and I haven't had it in a few years.
The problem
phenomenal pumpkin / fall beer.
Yeah, the problem is most pumpkin beers make pumpkin the main feature. And if pumpkin is a minor feature in it, and it's all about the barrel age, or it's about it being this big old stout, or this imperial brown or something like that, then I'm all for trying that. But it's the ones that are like super pumpkin specific and heavy.
I avoid them
like the plague.
They make the pumpkin, where the kin is spelled with a K-Y.
And that's
Kentucky,
like,
obviously. That's
barrel aged.
That being said, I think both of those are in like the 15% range. So not the kind of beer that you drink that you drink all the time.
You definitely split that with a friend.
Yeah, yeah. But speaking of seasonality, I think it's September when fresh hop beers are typically on because of harvest season. And not too long ago, enjoyed Born Yesterday.
Oh, by Lagunitas?
The Lagunitas fresh hop. They've got a Born Again Yesterday or something like that. That's actually not a fresh hop, I think. It's like a fake. Fake fresh hop.
But the Born Yesterday is delicious.
Born Yesterday is so good. And so most of the time hops, they're processed into pellet form, frozen. They get packed off, you know, shipped off in pouches, that kind of thing. Obviously, if they're fresh hop, they're literally making the beers with like the cone, like the hop cones.
Uh-huh.
And not surprisingly, they have this amazingly crisp, delicious, grassy herbal flavor that you cannot replicate,
because hops go bad like really quickly.
Yeah, they go bad, and even when they brew those beers, you have to drink them pretty quickly too while they're still alive. That's like, that's always how I describe those beers. It's like they're still moving around in the cans a little
bit. You want them within like 6 weeks of bottling, essentially. So yeah, look at the Born On date or whatever.
That's honestly my favorite quote-unquote seasonal beer, just because of the freshness.
Yeah,
it's like farm to mouth. Farm to glass.
So I think it's good to note that there are some great fall beers that aren't pumpkin beers. And if you like pumpkin beers, more power to you. It's just
Joel,
not my
Joel
jam.
Likes turkey flavored beer.
Yeah.
Only the dark meat, though.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. It's more flavorable than the white meat. Like, we all know this. All right,
that's
but
true.
For our listeners who don't care much about beer, we'll keep moving on. Let's get to Kathy's question. She says, do kids still make their own Halloween costumes? I'm sure my family saved a lot of money when we did that back in the day. So, Matt, I don't know. Homemade costumes, what are your thoughts?
Oh, I like them. It feels like something from a bygone era.
Yeah.
You know, like, I totally remember.
Like Little House on the Prairie.
Even as a kid myself. I mean, I wasn't born in the 1880s or whatever Little House on the Prairie is. But I remember my dad making a ghost costume for me, which is the classic. Literally just a white sheet over your head with holes cut for the eyes. And of course, I remember just constantly tripping and falling everywhere and getting hurt. So probably not worth it. That's one that I don't remember.
I feel like I'm
too fondly.
I remember my mom breaking out the sewing machine back in the day. And
oh, yeah?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I mean, just I remember my little sister being a black sheep at one point. And it was just the goofiest looking costume. It was adorable, though, because it's unique. It's one of a kind. So I think they're rare, but I'd love to see more of them.
Yeah. So that being said, I will say, I don't know if we've ever talked about this on the show. My kids go to a classical school. It's like a nerdy, traditional, like liberal arts kind of school. And at the school, they have what's called Classical Character Day. And not surprisingly, what that means, they're allowed, because normally they're wearing like the standard uniform. But on Classical Character Day, you can dress up as a historical figure that literally has to be someone that you've studied.
Like Pikachu, you mean, right?
Exactly. You know, the classics in the first like few months of school. And I will say that it has caused our kids to be a little more creative, because there are still some things to buy to kind of land the costume.
Yeah.
But I do appreciate the ingenuity, the inventiveness that goes into it, because a lot of times you do have some of those elements. In the past, like one of our daughters was Artemis, the Greek goddess. One of our daughters this year is going to be Nefertiti, I think that's how you say it, like the Egyptian queen. Do you know who this is, the Egyptian queen?
No, it brings up, like, I know.
You probably have seen, there's a famous statue or bust of her, and one of her eyes has kind of been knocked out.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
And it looks like the pupil's gone and the iris is gone. It's just white. And so she keeps, anytime she talks about being her, she grabs the bottom part of her eyelid and pulls her eye down and looks up in order to white out her eye. I think it's going to be pretty hilarious.
Yeah. No, I love that.
I'm sure you know which kid came up with that one as well.
Right. Well, I think...
But I'm all for the creativity, I guess, that goes into it, because like those, when it comes to actually handing out candy, like those are the kids that you want to give double candy to, right? Well, versus the kids that are just showing up with a backpack.
Let's be honest, like the ready-made, off-the-rack...
It's not
costumes,
as fun.
They're not as fun.
It's cool.
They're very expensive.
Yes, yeah.
So if we're talking about saving money on Halloween, using what you have lying around, you probably already have, if you've got a few kids, some sort of costume bucket that you can tap and you can, you know, it doesn't have to be like putting on the same exact thing, but like how can you maybe combine a few of those things to create a cool new outfit that's a little off the beaten path? Yeah. I think that's a good way to go.
Last year you were G.I. Joe man. This year you can be zombie G.I. Joe man. It's too short. It's all ripped up and busted up. Just squirt some fake blood all
that's
over
right.
That thing. You're good to go.
See, I like this. You could be like a Halloween costume consultant.
Take any costume and just call it zombie, whatever, and you're good for at least 2 or 3 years.
That's right. Or I may just make mine sexy, right? Is what I do and everything, which is I know the trend. I don't actually do that. All right. Ben, he asks, our family loves trick-or-treating, and our two young kids will usually go knock on roughly 5 to 10 select doors before coming home to hand out treats to others for a few hours. Our neighborhood really goes all out with the treats. We're talking custom professional sugar cookies, massive goodie bags, full-size candy bars, and even hard seltzers for the adults. So if you're a kid...
Which I can appreciate there. Yeah, I like that.
Except we do craft beer instead, right? But everyone seems to have an extravagant niche and goes all in. Do you guys have ideas for something unique, fun, and affordable that we can hand out?
Ooh, you want to kick this one off?
So I was thinking that why not take like wood scraps and turn them into like little cutouts or something and hand paint them? Maybe there's like a little fun, unique gift that you can give out in that way. We've actually like wood scraps.
You said scraps. I thought you said wood straps. I was like, okay, they're wearing these cutouts or okay, gotcha.
Yeah, maybe you could just like, you know,
Halloween ornaments.
Exactly. Yeah, something like that. Like cut out little ghosts.
Extend the season.
You probably want to give out like a tiny piece of candy to go with it so you don't get your house TP'd or something later on. But a little hand painted, a little handmade something or other. Maybe your kids help you make them. It becomes this family activity to create like 20 or 30 of these things, and maybe it becomes the coolest house on the block because it's like something tangible that's going to last for a long time.
So Ben mentioning the seltzers or hard whatever drinks for adults made me think of the fact that everyone's giving out stuff for kids to eat, and oftentimes they are eating candy as you trick or treat, right? What if you give out a drink and not like a pre-packaged drink, whatever, but get like a big thing, get like a big cauldron looking thing, get some apple cider in there, get some dry ice, and all of a sudden you got a witch's cauldron. And
maybe you have one for adults too, where
you got the 21 plus cauldron, and then you got the little kids cauldron, and that would be so affordable. And just little styrofoam cups, and then obviously if you're the one that's there, you got to wear the witch costume or the warlock, and you're providing more of like an experience
with the long like Snow White witch nose
as opposed to just handing them a piece of candy, because that's not going to cost hardly any money at all.
I like that.
I guess I'm drawing on our previous or past experience. One year we had a fire pit out front and we did s'mores in front of our house, because we were literally going for this, where we're trying to think, okay, the pre-packaged, that's what's so expensive, how do we break it down? And then we realized, oh, bag of marshmallows and a few full, you know, chocolate
graham
bars.
Crackers
they're expensive if you're giving out one bar at a time, but if you're breaking them up and making s'mores out of them, that's great from a financial standpoint. It's not great when you've got 20 random kids running around with like marshmallows that are on fire
and you're trying to get them like sign a waiver before the
my gosh. So all that being said, we're never going to do the s'mores thing again, because that was kind of scary.
Okay, random side note, a couple of our neighbor kids came over and did s'mores the other night in our backyard over a fire pit, and
were my kids there?
No.
I thought they were. Is while we were gone?
Yeah, that was while we were gone. So this is when I was there. So little dude, he sets his marshmallow on fire and he starts flinging it, and he accidentally throws the marshmallow that hits my leg. I almost catch on fire, dude. So
that's what you, I'm telling you.
He's never invited back.
Like kids with like the metal pokers with flaming marshmallows. The scariest thing.
Yes.
I didn't realize that something
so
to
maybe
avoid.
The cauldron makes a little bit more sense.
Yeah, you're just finding a way to do whatever it is that you're giving away in batch, but I'm totally with you. Finding ways to do it on the cheap is the way to go. This one is from Jessica on Facebook. She said, this isn't a personal issue I'm facing now, but maybe you could go over how to save money on funerals, like cremation versus burial, if you can skip embalming, or how to get deals on caskets. or even if it's legal or possible to just be tossed in the forest somewhere, LOL.
I like that she put an LOL after that because...
Just making it clear.
I was a little nervous.
She wasn't being serious.
She's going to start dropping off dead bodies in the forest. Well, I think...
Yeah, what
a,
do you think?
Well, this is a great question. This is certainly, you know, a spooky question that isn't Halloween specific, but I'm also glad to know that it sounds like Jessica's not on death's door. She's just kind of like doing her due diligence here. But
it's death related, so that's good.
Yeah.
She's on theme. We appreciate that,
on
Jessica.
Point. Well, and cremation is almost always cheaper than traditional burial. We're talking like traditional burials often 4 or 5x the cost. So it's really important to know that like, and some people have religious views on this or something like that, which is no problem. Obviously, you want to let that be your guiding light. But for folks who don't really care, they're just trying to figure out what saves them the most money, right? After death, well, cremation is going to be the cheapest thing
that's,
for your family.
Sign me up for that, man.
Right.
Yeah, but
I'm down with that too.
Because then you're able to avoid one of the most costly items, at least when it comes to a funeral, which
that's
is the casket, right?
Yeah.
I mean, you're talking either $1,000 like on the cheap end up to like $20,000 for a high-end casket, which is insane.
A huge part of the problem in this industry is a lack of transparency.
Yeah.
So this is historically an industry where it's hard to figure out what the price is going to be ahead of time. And so the good news is there are people in the tech space who are trying to do something about that. Got a couple suggestions for you. First, I would say consider prepaying for your funeral or burial costs ahead of time through your state funeral and memorial society. Like ours not only has a helpful price list in one handy dandy location, but you can also become a member, which gives you access to guaranteed pricing. And it's just really cheap. It helps take the stress out of the equation. I think it's $35, Matt, to join our state's.
It's
a one-time fee. It's not an annual fee or anything like that. And then you kind of have access to these great prices, essentially. And I know most people in their 20s and 30s are like, cool, don't care. But like, yeah, it's a really good thing for a lot of people to know about. And just Google your state and funeral and memorial society and it'll pop up. And like, let's say if we're talking about someone you love who's dying though, comparison shopping is crucial because the price range can be massive. Like I was saying, the prices are rarely given when you're searching sites. So if you're going to, let's say, funeral parlors near you, yeah.
Okay.
If you're going to just their specific sites, you might have a really hard time figuring how much it's going to cost. So you want to go to a third-party site that helps do some of that work for you. Funeralocity, kind of like Travelocity, but funeralocity.com is probably the best site out there for helping you find pricing. They make the phone calls even to a lot of these companies to try to get the pricing so that they can make it, and that they're constantly checking up on the pricing to make sure they're giving you accurate pricing on their site. And then when it comes to getting tossed in the woods, that's just probably no bueno. Like, not a good way to go. I'm sure there's something illegal about that.
Yeah, there's something, maybe the health code. I don't know if the FDA or I don't know who gets involved, or the forestry division.
Right.
They probably
but those cremations really can be really inexpensive. We're talking barely four figures.
Oh my gosh.
Or maybe even 3 figures.
I think you could probably do that pretty dang affordably. But yeah, I think what's important here is then to make sure that this is something you've talked about ahead of time. And we kind of touched on this last week when we talked with Chanel Reynolds. But figuring out what the wishes of the deceased are before they're deceased is the best way to go. Because if you don't talk about it in the heat of the moment, right? This is an emotional time. And I think you're going to be more likely to err on the side of maybe spending too much as opposed to too little, and maybe actually having this expensive funeral versus something that's a little more private at your home. And when you've done the work on the front end, you can avoid all of that expense and all of that guilt where you're left holding the bill at the end of the day.
I think there can be a lot of guilt there. And by the way, if you're looking to buy a casket, if you're saying, no, we're going to go the burial route, buying the casket yourself is often a better way to go. And you can go to Costco. Truly, like Costco has,
it always makes those lists of like, weird things you never knew that Costco sold,
and their caskets run the gamut. You can get like a $600 casket,
you get a wheel of cheese, giant wheel of cheese, and you can get a casket,
and you can bury your wheel of cheese if that's what you really want to do. But yeah, that's a great place to turn for the casket, as opposed to getting it with the markup from the funeral home. You can go ahead and get that.
Yeah. So how do you feel about donating your body to science? Because that's a way that you can avoid.
That's true.
Because she was talking about avoiding the embalming side of things. That's certainly a way to save a few $100s, right? If you just go with it's called an immediate burial, as opposed to having a showing where they're, you know, chemicals injected in the body to preserve the body so it doesn't start going bad.
A relatively new phenomenon. I mean,
it's kind of weird. I don't love it, but when you donate your body to science, obviously that allows you. I love it because it allows you to have a memorial service on your own time, like on your own timeline. Like, you're not rushed into making a decision, which also means that you can probably find the best rates, whether it's at a venue or even at a church,
yeah,
because they're probably going to charge you something. But if you can schedule it well in advance, that not only gives you the ability to save more money, but I think it allows folks to schedule a little bit and say, all right, I need to make sure to be there for the celebration of life
mm-hmm.
service. Sorry, tangent. How do you feel about donating your body to science?
I'm down with it. Yeah, yeah. And you can.
Would you want to do that?
You just tell for the yourself, state, right? So it's listed on your driver's license whether or not you're.
I'm an organ donor, but I don't know about organ donor. A body donor.
Oh, well, I guess that'd be separate. No, I guess that'd be separate, right?
Like a cadaver for medical students.
I'm okay with that.
I'm down for the cremation. I don't know how I feel about med students. I like it because it furthers science, but something about them like picking apart your body.
No, I'm more than okay with that. I mean, what else is my body going to be used for except for like the furthering of humanity, right? So
like I love the ideal of it, but I would much rather have my ashes scattered in some meaningful special place
yeah.
that my family can go visit, like a top of a mountain. Maybe it'll be at the
Big
top
Lebowski
of
style
Quandary Peak right. over there outside of Breck. Speaking of 14ers,
yeah,
not Big Lebowski style with the ash all up in your face.
All right, well, we've got more to get to on this episode, including questions about financial skeletons in the closet and maybe how to have a minimalist Halloween. And I think some of these will be applicable to like how you think about Halloween for next year too. We'll get to more spooky money questions on today's How to Money right after this. Asking the right questions can greatly impact your future, especially when it comes to your finances. So, if you're looking for a financial advisor you can trust, certified financial planner professionals are committed to acting in your best interest. They are committed to high ethical standards and even had to pass a rigorous exam before they could become a CFP professional.
They offer financial planning and services that take a more comprehensive view of your financial and personal circumstances and are customized for your needs. Certified financial planner professionals can offer advice on a wide range of issues like reviewing your investment portfolio's allocation, handling an inheritance, rolling over a company retirement plan, building education savings, and so much more.
That's why it's got to be a CFP. Find your CFP professional at letsmakeaplan.org.
If you're listening to this podcast right now and you're a small business owner, listen up. Upswell Marketing would like to remind you that when customers choose your small business, they're actually choosing you. So focus on super serving your existing customers and let Upswell handle the pipeline generation of new leads and customers. They do everything from hyper-targeting best fit prospects through campaign optimization. Upswell Marketing's unique approach includes direct mail, search engine marketing, and social media ads, and has fueled more than 10,000 small business success stories. Upswell specializes in developing customized direct response campaigns and is now offering a no-obligation free assessment of your current marketing strategies. Not to mention, new customers also receive 15% off their first order when they mention that they heard about Upswell on this podcast. For more information, visit upswellmarketing.com. That's upswellmarketing.com.
And now a word from the show's sponsors at Betterment. Do you want your money to dream big? Do you want your money to be a total self-starter? Are you annoyed that your money doesn't work hard enough? Don't worry, Betterment is here to help.
Betterment is the automated investing and savings app that makes your money hustle. Their automated technology is built to help maximize returns, meaning when you invest with Betterment, your money can auto-adjust as you get closer to your goal. Rebalance if your portfolio gets too far out of line and your dividends are automatically reinvested. That can increase the potential for compound returns. In other words, your money is breaking a sweat while you can be breaking bread. You'll never picture your money the same way again.
Betterment, the automated investing and savings app that makes your money hustle. Visit Betterment.com to get started. Investing involves risk. Performance is not guaranteed.
All right, we are back from the break. We've got more Halloween-themed questions for folks. We're actually going to talk about pumpkin spice lattes here in a minute, too. But first, let's hear from a listener up in New York.
Hi, Joel and Matt. This is Madison from New York City. I am a 24-year-old who is totally spooked by how to save up for a vacation and spend on a vacation without feeling guilty and without backtracking on my financial goals. I discovered your podcast during the pandemic and am in a good place financially. I'm lucky to not have student loans. I've contributed to my Roth IRA since 2019, and I take advantage of my employer's 401k match. I am just getting started on putting money into an individual brokerage account. However, with high cost of living in New York City, especially rent, I find it hard to do anything on top of that. I am super spooked by the idea of straying from my goals and strategies, but I know I need a break and want to plan for a vacation in a smart way. Any advice for a newly minted adult figuring out how to vacation? The idea of saving up a few $1,000s for leisure seems like a far-off goal for me. I know there are credit card point hacks and other tips and tricks to take advantage of. Where would you recommend starting, and how can I shake this spooked feeling? Thanks for all you guys do, and happy spooky season.
Matt, I love this question, and I love hearing from someone like Madison, because she feels like someone like I can identify with the struggle that she's going through, because that's something that I went through early on when I was like, I really want to make a lot of financial progress, and it got to the point of hyper frugality at times for me. I've grown a lot since then, but I get how, especially in those early years, you just feel like funneling more and more money is going to help set you up into those retirement accounts is going to help set you up for your future. But she's in such a good spot here. No student loans, right? Getting the match every year, contributing significantly to her Roth IRA and opening the brokerage account on top of it. I think she's way beyond where most of her friends and coworkers are with their finances. And she should feel really proud about all the progress she's made.
Yeah, absolutely. And at the core of the issue here, I think, is mindset. Right? Because the truth is, if you can't find the space in your budget for your craft beer equivalent, if you can't change how it is that you're thinking about your money, if you can't enjoy some of the fruits of your labor while simultaneously saving and investing for the future, then you're going to get burned out. This is like a core, crucial, fundamental question. And just punting those trips that you want to take for a few more years and then a few more years after that, like that seems like a really bad idea from a balance perspective. Mm-hmm. And so I love that you're wrestling with these ideas at a younger age so that you can hopefully instill some habits, right? You can build up a pattern of spending some of your money now, because honestly, none of us are guaranteed a tomorrow. And so that's a little, you know, Halloween spookiness I'm trying to infuse. Like, we may not be around, and so I think it's important to live.
You might be dead.
Yes, like if we can start living in the way that we want to live in the future a little bit now, I think that's going to go a long ways, not only from a standpoint of how you're thinking about money, but it has a lot to do with your happiness in the here and now.
Yeah, it does. And we talk about, there's statistics about people that take all their vacation end up, they end up doing better in their career, right? Because they end up getting the rest that they need. They get to get away from their work for a week or two, and it ends up making them more productive, better at their job. And so you have to think about it like that too. It is actually kind of a good kind of selfish play to take your vacation, I think.
It's that self-care.
Yeah.
Right? Like, you can't continually burn the candle. Take it to its logical extreme where it's just like, okay, well, I got to work multiple jobs. I got to pull all-nighters. How long is that going to last, right? Like, your body will literally start breaking down, and you will not be able to maintain that pace. It's more of a marathon than a sprint.
But I think for someone like Madison, maybe that's the way to look at it. It's like, oh, wait a second. If I don't take this vacation, guess what? It's going to be worse for my finances. And I think maybe I'll prod you in that direction, is to like look at some of that research about how people taking all their vacation time actually benefits them in their career. And maybe that'll cause you to take the opposite. Like, I can't afford not to take that vacation that I want to take, right? And my guess is that based on how you handle your finances, that you aren't spending like a drunken sailor or anything like that, right?
Yeah, she's doing good.
Yeah.
And all the good money moves.
Right. And if you're investing that much and that regularly, your budget is probably really buttoned up too. But it's a good idea to take a look and see if you can curb spending on a couple of things that maybe you don't care that much about. For example, thinking like your cell phone service. Can you get it from $70 a month to $15 a month? Maybe you've already done that, but that's just a thought. Like, were you to do that, you might be able to mentally account for some of the fun money that you're going to spend in the future for funneling more dollars towards the vacation fund, so you can take that one international or at least awesome domestic trip every single year. You're able to justify that spending. You're able to go on vacation without the guilt because you've reassigned those $55 every single month that you just saved.
Heck yeah.
Your overall expenses haven't really changed all that much. You haven't really changed your lifestyle, but you found a couple of ways to cut back that aren't necessarily like pinching you hard. You're still getting a very similar product at the end of the day, but you still were able to make more room.
Yeah, it's more efficient. You've reprioritized those dollars. You're like redeploying certain dollars. It's like, okay, all of these dollars over here were kind of being wasted because I can get that for a lot cheaper. And now instead you're able to put that money towards your travel. But other than that, Madison, and this might sound crazy, but consider dialing back on your actual investments. This kind of goes in line with what you're saying, Joel, about how it is that you think about working and working more versus working less.
Did you hear my audible gasp there?
I did. I think, Madison heard it too. But if you are going above and beyond the match, if you are maxing out your Roth already, well, maybe that taxable brokerage account can wait. We don't want you to live the spooky existence of building up massive dollars of investments but missing out on the joy of vacationing in your 20s, hanging out with your friends. By the way, this is part of the reason that we're not FIRE adherents, right? Financial independence, retire early. There is a lot of emphasis on the future, which isn't, it's not terrible, it's not bad, but often it is at the expense of the present, which we feel is not good.
Mm-hmm.
There's a big difference between enjoying the here and now versus YOLO, right? There's yeah. a difference in the ability to wisely spend your dollars in meaningful ways today versus going all out and going for bankrupt. And funneling a few more dollars towards memorable trips, it sounds really wise to us, and it sounds like it's something that you want to do as well. So use that desire to want to go on some of these vacations. Use that as fuel to push you in the right direction.
Yeah, and she mentioned credit card points, and I do think that that can be part of your strategy, and it's a helpful totally. Part of your strategy, right? Like, if you're going to use credit cards wisely, which I would imagine you are going to, then using those, getting the sign-up bonuses, adding those points, you know, getting those points that you can spend on a hotel stay or a free flight maybe, like that can help significantly reduce the cost of your trip. And so, yeah, save up a little more money, use some points to your advantage as well. Like Emily and I, when we went to New York, Matt, Southwest points for the win right there. Free flights for both of us. That is the kind of thing that can significantly help you make that trip more achievable, less costly. And so maybe that can be that extra kind of kick in the pants to get you out the door, onto the plane, and
the cherry on top.
Yeah, out of the office.
And the more you think about it too, right? Because like in a way, the points game, it's gamifying it. And so what I found though is the more you more time you spend playing a game, the more interested you get in it, and mm-hmm. it might even cause you to want to take it even more after you've sort of worked towards acquiring some of those points. And one last little bit of counterintuitive advice, like you're talking about working less so that you can make more.
Mm-hmm.
We talked about investing less so that you can live more. How about getting a bigger place in New York? And here's the catch.
Waiting.
Yes, the rent's going to be more expensive on a bigger place. But what if you're able to add, like, say right now you have one roommate, right? Because you got the smallest place that you could possibly manage. What if you get a slightly bigger place and it means adding two more roommates or even three more roommates, right? What if there's five of y'all splitting rent? I think, and I mentioned this because she's talking about how expensive it is to live in New York.
Which is accurate.
Yes. I mean, I'm sure that is easily her largest single line item in her budget every single month. But I think thinking through some different creative ways to reduce that one particular expense could more than easily cover the cost of multiple, yeah. honestly, multiple vacations.
Yeah.
It makes me think of, I had a friend and he did, it's made the headlines more recently. It's called hotbedding. He was hotbedding before it was cool, but literally it's a single bedroom place and you share a big, like they can fit a king size bed in there. So share the bed with your roommate, someone you don't necessarily know. It's not something I would personally do.
Nope, sorry.
Not really interested in that.
Frugal or cheap? I'm gonna say that one's cheap for me.
We've got another friend.
To each their own though, I guess.
To each their own. She moved from New York actually to New Jersey because she just had a reprioritization in life, and she still works out of New York. She doesn't talk about the whole New Jersey thing, but she mm-hmm. just rides the train in. And I know living in New York is a part of the lifestyle. You're in your 20s. You want to be able to experience all that the city has to offer. But I think that's another way you could potentially cut back, again, on what I know is a massive expense for you
yeah.
every single month.
I think you're going to look back. You're going to be really happy 5 years from now that you're not going to miss out on the what $15,000 of compounding returns, but you are going to miss out on those memories because you're saving enough. You're doing great. Like you're crushing it compared to most people your age. So take your foot off the pedal just a little bit. Find these creative ways to bring a little more cash or credit card points into your life so that you can travel without spending a ton of money, but also feel free to loosen the purse strings just a bit. And I think, yeah, you'll be like, oh man, I took some awesome trips in my 20s. And those memories, man, they're for a long time. I'm so glad I took all the trips I took in my 20s.
Heck
and
yeah.
I really don't regret the money that I spent on those. All right, Joe in the Facebook group, he said, how much do Americans spend on pumpkin spice lattes? Matt, a quick Google search on this reveals that Americans spend more than $500 million annually on pumpkin spice products.
That's a lot of money.
And the average price of a single pumpkin spice latte in the United States is $5.95, which is up by about 50 cents compared to last year. So
it's getting more expensive yeah. to enjoy the PSL.
Listeners know my stance on pumpkin beers. I have very similar stance on pumpkin coffee flavored stuff.
So it's funny because this year, 2023, it's the 20-year anniversary of when the pumpkin spice latte came out. They introduced this in 2003. And I know this for multiple reasons. I know it because I read it in the news. But I also remember when it came out, I was literally in college and they They unveiled like there's multiple holiday drinks that they came out with. I guess the pumpkin spice latte was the one, you know, one of the ones that took off. But it did make me wonder, how much did it used to cost back then? So I couldn't find a price. If you figure it out using an inflation calculator, you can estimate that it cost around $4 if you adjust for inflation. So I thought, of course, I'm into the numbers. How much were you to enjoy a pumpkin spice latte? Let's just say once a week. Obviously, they're not available year round, but let's just say once a week, $4. So, you know, you're dropping $16 a month. And instead, let's say, so that's person A, Mr. Pumpkin Spice Latte. But let's say the person B is Mr. or Miss S&P 500. And instead, they took that money and invested it in the S&P 500.
Mm-hmm.
Compounding over the past 20 years, the S&P has earned 9.75. If you were to have invested that for the past 20 years, you would have over $3 million.
No,
I'm kidding.
No, you wouldn't.
It's actually not an impressive amount of money. It's
probably
like,
what, a few grand?
It's like a little, it's actually a little bit over $10,000.
Oh, wow, okay. So it's not nothing.
Which is maybe more than you think, but also, it's not, I don't know, it's just like, oh, cut back on your lattes and you can afford a house. That's not a down payment
right on
a house. And so the moral of this lesson, perhaps, is maybe you should just enjoy the pumpkin spice latte if that is something that you actually enjoy. Yeah. I don't want you spending blindly without even thinking about it.
But also within reason, you and I, we go to our local coffee shop once a week.
Exactly. That's what we do, a week. Yeah.
And because it's like, it makes it special, makes it memorable.
Mm-hmm.
I enjoy it. But if we did it every day, it wouldn't be nearly as special.
But Joel, if we invested instead over the next 20 years, we might have $10,000.
If we never went on vacations, we'd have a lot more money in our retirement accounts too, but a much blander life, right?
Yeah.
So, all right, this one comes from Cody. He says, an idea that I have for you guys to talk about is financial skeletons in the closet. That comes up for me. He says, discovering financial burdens, mishaps, behaviors of loved ones that can break trust or cause harm upon death or while they're still alive. He said, something spooky for me is a looming threat of identity theft, password security, sensitive information breaches, how to have the right safeguards in place.
Yeah, so I just like the financial skeletons aspect of it, right? Because this is why we want the financial lines of communication to be open regularly. I mean, you can never guarantee that your significant other won't lie to you or do something behind your back that puts your finances at risk. But you can take some important steps to ensure that it is less likely going to happen. And I think, namely, having just regular conversations about shared money goals, about how it is that you're achieving those goals, feeling like that you're on the same page, that you're on the same team working in the same direction. And also make sure that you are allowing each other to just have enough financial independence within the relationship. Mm-hmm. So we're talking about a set determined amount of blow money that isn't necessarily accountable for, to where it feels like that there is this inherent trust that's built into your budget.
Yeah, the tighter those constraints, the more likely somebody is to be like, I can't take it anymore, right?
And then you start going secret, under the radar spending, that kind of thing.
Open a credit card without your significant other knowing.
I think the ability to spend money in the way that each of you sees fit at a certain dollar amount that you agree upon with no questions asked is an incredibly healthy way to help ensure that some of this financial infidelity doesn't take place.
Yeah. All right. Cody also mentioned the looming threat of identity theft and password security. So I'll just quickly mention a couple things on both of those. Bitwarden is a free kind of password app, all-in-one password app, which a lot of our listeners have recommended, Matt. And it's open source, completely free. It's definitely worth checking out if you're kind of worried about password security and having all your passwords in one place. I think Bitwarden's a good site to turn to. When he talks about identity theft, well, the best way to shut down identity theft is to freeze your credit.
That's right.
And so that's we have an article up on that at howtomoney.com that we'll put in the show notes for this. But the truth is that it's a free thing, thanks to federal law, to be able to freeze your credit. It used to cost money, which is so frustrating. And there are other things out there that are similar that the credit bureaus will try to sell you. Oh, do the credit lock instead. It's $29.95 a month. And that is so bogus, and you should avoid it because, one, it's ridiculously expensive, and two, it's not even as effective as a credit freeze. And so credit freezes, 100% free. It'll take you just a few minutes. And the best way to prevent someone from stealing your good name and your credit is to have a credit freeze in place.
Exactly. You want the freeze, not the lock. So speaking of financial infidelity, it happens. And actually, this Wednesday, we are talking about prenups. So you can look forward to that. Not something we've talked about before here on the podcast.
Yeah, not much.
So our next comment or question comes from Charisse. This is over in the Facebook group. And she said, minimalist Halloween? What would that look like? Both financially minimal and in terms of stuff. My kids want to decorate the yard because the neighbors have decorated yards, Mom. The candy quality expectations are high. Pulling in kids from all over the city, resulting in lots of trick-or-treaters. The Halloween costumes are expensive. They take up a lot of space in my house. But after they're purchased, I have a hard time throwing them away because they cost so dang much. So, minimal Halloween is what she says. What are your thoughts here regarding a more minimalist approach?
We were talking about
like the ghost aesthetic kind of goes with the whole minimalist
it does.
Chic as well. And so does...
So cheap.
What's your sister, a black sheep?
That's right. Which was, she was when she was little, yeah.
Are you sure she wasn't like a black cat?
She's still the black sheep of the family. No, it was like cotton balls pasted all over something. Yeah, like a unitard or something, for real. She was a black sheep. I'll have to dig up the picture. Maybe we can look it
in
the show notes.
If you can find the photo, we'll throw it up there.
It's good stuff. Yeah, I mean, I think the DIY thing, right? They're creative and cheap ways that you can decorate your yard. Actually, one of the best yards in our neighborhood, so much of the decorations are DIY. They've got these great ghosts on the front porch that are really cool with white bed sheets. They've got these eyes and fangs that they've done out of construction paper in the windows. So, it just takes some time and a little bit of creativity, a little bit of foresight. You don't really have to spend much money. And I would say, too, go to the thrift store. Say, hey, we've got a $20 budget. Man, this sounds like the most fun. And by the way, it's October 30th. I realize that this is not something you're probably going to do today and put them up tonight.
In the next 6 hours.
Just to be prepared, yeah. But this for next year. Say, like, all right, $20, let's get all the cool stuff we can get and figure out what we can make out of it. Like, what a fun little challenge to do with your fam. And I don't think it has to be $50 inflatables. I think there's a lot of stuff, yeah, that you can do that. And by the way, inflatables, I don't mind some of them, but they can be a little boring, right?
And you have to plug them in, they require more energy. Like, that's the other part of it, too, is to actually run the decor that you purchased. It costs even more money.
I mean, at your last house.
Lose.
You made this really cool, giant wooden bat that you painted black
hung
up every year. And that was...
Evidently, the guys that bought the house, I think they stick it up every year.
Well, you kept it. You gave it to them,
it
right?
It was a part of the house.
Yeah.
In our mind. Yeah, just the design of the house, it had this thing that... When you step back after we painted the house, we're like, it's kind of creepy if we painted that way because it kind of looks like wings. But then it was actually close to Halloween, and I was like, babe, what if I made like a plywood cutout bat body to go in between those two things and it looks like an actual bat? That's a great way to get that big impact.
That was a homemade decoration, though.
I forgot all about that.
Yeah, most people don't think about homemade decorations. They think about store-bought decorations. They're thinking about the $300 14-foot skeleton from Home Depot or whatever. And it's not that thing's not cool. It's just that, like, you know what's actually cooler? Like, thinking outside the box and doing it your own way.
Totally. I think Facebook yard sale, your local brick-and-mortar kids shop, they can be a great place to turn when it comes to used costumes as well. There's just no need to buy a brand new costume every single year. And there's no need to hang on to every single costume that you've ever used over the years. Maybe the best advice we can give now, with it being so close to Halloween, is think about the day after Halloween, because I think right after Halloween could be the best time to snag all those decorations, all those different costumes. And then as far as the costumes that you already have, just hang on to them for a single year, right? You don't have to hang on to every single costume you've ever owned over all the years. Just 1 year, you got one storage bin that you put the costumes in.
Pull them out October 1st.
Bust that thing out in the month of October. Halloween is on everyone's mind. You're going to be able to, like, maybe even get the same price that you paid for that costume, perhaps. I don't know. It depends on where inflation
goes. Especially if you got it used the year before and you're selling it used. You might break even.
Halloween costume arbitrage is what that is.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. All right, next question. This one's from Marla. She says, all right, one of the spookiest financial stories I've heard this year is the aftermath of the Robin Hood horror stories for people who got unexpected tax bills from day trading without doing enough research beforehand. And so, Matt, do you want to opine on that? Talk about kind of what happened to some of those investors?
Dude, I feel like this happens every year where folks are, like, they're trading inside of the brokerage accounts, right? And obviously they're doing it more within Robinhood because of the interface, of the confetti.
Literally statistics showing how much more.
There was a New York Times analysis, and they found that Robinhood users, they buy and trade the riskiest products at the fastest pace compared to users on all the other trading platforms. And it's not even close. Those trades done inside of a taxable brokerage account, they come with massive tax consequences, in addition to the extreme swings and just poor behavior that Robinhood incentivizes, which already leads to worse results for most folks. And this is the best case scenario, right? The fact that they would owe money, because when you trade based on headlines, based on whims, based on how lunch is settling in your stomach from that day, or like what your friends are doing, owing money to the IRS is the best case scenario, and more folks are thinking, man, I wish I owe taxes, because that would mean I didn't lose half of my investment because I'm losing money hand over fist.
And if you're trading regularly on a platform like that and you think you're doing it in a stoic manner, the truth is that's highly unlikely. There are even studies about how judges rule, Matt, in certain cases. They rule based on how hungry they are, like before lunch and after lunch.
Yeah, that's exactly what I was thinking. Yeah. Like they're... are more negative outcomes right before lunch versus right after lunch, where they're just fat and happy.
And
basically.
I bet if you were to ask them if they do that, most of the time they would probably assume.
No,
I don't let my hunger influence my legal decision making.
I'm a judge. Of course, I am objective.
So the reality is that we as humans, we think we're objective even when we're not.
We're not.
And most folks don't realize, by the way, that if they own a security for less than a year, less than 12 months, they'll pay ordinary income rates instead of the more favorable capital gains rate. So that's another mistake that a lot of Robinhood traders have made. So let's learn maybe from these spooky financial stories. Let's avoid the traps that so many others have fallen into. Most people don't realize when they open up one of these. And Matt, so many people are opening up a Robinhood account and they're investing in a taxable brokerage account before sticking any dollars into a Roth IRA too. So there's so many reasons to avoid that route. And it's, you know, we talked about the Robinhood match recently and how that can be, if you're really disciplined and you're a savvy investor and you're opening up the Robinhood account, but and you're funneling, you're maxing out the Roth IRA, you're getting the free match, and you're not actually making any day trading sort of decisions. If you can control your behavior to that extent, then maybe it's the right way for you to go. But you got to be careful, because a lot of Robinhood traders can't avoid the perils.
Yeah. But bottom line, if you are the same type of person that optimizes credit card points, I think you can invest within an IRA, within Robinhood, and take full advantage of that match.
All right, man. We got a few more Facebook Halloween-related money questions to get to on this episode. We'll get to the rest of them right after this. Asking the right questions can greatly impact your future, especially when it comes to your finances. So, if you're looking for a financial advisor you can trust, certified financial planner professionals are committed to acting in your best interest. They are committed to high ethical standards and even had to pass a rigorous exam before they could become a CFP professional.
They offer financial planning and services that take a more comprehensive view of your financial and personal circumstances and are customized for your needs. Certified financial planner professionals can offer advice on a wide range of issues like reviewing your investment portfolio's allocation, handling an inheritance, rolling over a company retirement plan, building education savings, and so much more.
That's why it's got to be a CFP. Find your CFP professional at letsmakeaplan.org.
If you're listening to this podcast right now and you're a small business owner, listen up. Upswell Marketing would like to remind you that when customers choose your small business, they're actually choosing you. So focus on super serving your existing customers and let Upswell handle the pipeline generation of new leads and customers. They do everything from hyper-targeting best fit prospects through campaign optimization. Upswell Marketing's unique approach includes direct mail, search engine marketing, and social media ads, and has fueled more than 10,000 small business success stories. Upswell specializes in developing customized direct response campaigns and is now offering a no-obligation free assessment of your current marketing strategies. Not to mention, new customers also receive 15% off their first order when they mention that they heard about Upswell on this podcast. For more information, visit upswellmarketing.com. That's upswellmarketing.com.
Spring cleaning is kind of an annual rite of passage. We've all got to do it, minimize the junk that we have in our house. Emily and I, we just cleaned our closets out. It took hours, but it was so worth it. Now we've only got stuff in there that we love, and it's easier to find everything too. And so, you know, while cleaning your closets is helpful, well, there's something else you can do for your family this spring. Shopping for life insurance with Policy Genius, for example, is a really important part of your financial planning for the year.
That's right. Yeah, and here is the thing that's important to remember, because you might be thinking you don't need to check out Policy Genius because you've got a policy through work. But even if you have a life insurance policy through your job, it may not offer you enough protection for your family's needs, and it may not follow you if you leave your job. With Policy Genius, you can find life insurance policies that start at just $292 per year for $1 million of coverage. Some options offer same-day approval and avoid unnecessary medical exams. Policy Genius works for you, not the insurance companies, and that means they don't have an incentive to recommend one insurer over another, so you can trust their guidance.
Save time and money and provide your family with a financial safety net using Policy Genius. Head to PolicyGenius.com to get your free life insurance quotes and see how much you could save. That's PolicyGenius.com.
All right, we are back and we will get to our favorite scary movie of all time here in a minute. But so right before the break, we heard from Marla. We have actually got something else from Marla. And she said, this one could be like opening a can of worms. This is a completely wild idea, but in quote-unquote industry that has always fascinated me is sugar daddy, sugar baby situations. Additionally, people who monetize their feet on OnlyFans. Very interesting to me.
Yeah.
The ethical questions, the financial impact, the idea of monetizing your body. So, Joel, yeah, what are your thoughts on... why didn't we lead with OnlyFans?
We should have.
We missed an... okay, I might actually change...
that's bad marketing.
I'll change the title of the episode. Even though at the beginning we didn't mention the OnlyFans things at all.
We've never really tackled that subject on the pod.
No.
So yeah. I'm glad Marla brought it up because variety is a spice of life. And so we're going to go there. Let's talk about maybe the merits or lack thereof of selling feet pics on the internet, Matt. I don't want to sound like a prude here, but this is not our cup of tea. And I guess my thought is just because it's potentially profitable doesn't mean that it's good for society or it's a worthwhile endeavor.
Totally agree.
And so,
This is erring on the side of cheap as opposed to frugal.
I'm willing to leave money on the table, Matt, if it means not monetizing my feet.
Yeah. This is also a case, I think, of like a small percentage of folks who are actually making the bulk of the revenue. Some OnlyFans creators, they want to make it sound like it's some sort of liberating work that everyone out there can participate in. But from what we've read, it's an infinitesimally small percentage of the folks on the site who are making the bulk of the profit.
It's the 80-20 rule.
Yeah, I bet it's even more than that.
It's probably way more extreme.
I'm guessing
that,
so. Yeah. And so.
It's probably like 95-5.
I think, yeah, or like 99-1.
Yeah.
'Cause I think there are some folks who might be able to turn a site like that into a lucrative career, if you want to even call it that. But just from a just remove the morals from it, if you're only looking at the numbers, if you're only looking at the finances, it's not going to work out. The numbers aren't going to pan out in your favor for the vast majority of folks who are going to give it a shot.
And I don't think Marla was saying she's interested in this. I think she's just curious about
how
this
works. Yeah, it's always interested her.
It has been interesting to see the rise of the direct creator to audience route that people are taking. And in some ways it's like the rest of media, right? It's become very much direct to audience. We're cutting out the middleman. And so where do you go get your news? Well, it's often not from CBS News Tonight, right? It's from a YouTube creator or somebody on Instagram, or it's from somebody who writes a Substack. And so in some ways, it makes sense
yep.
Because it's what's happening everywhere else on the internet, but it's also not my idea.
Doesn't mean that I like it.
Right. Yeah. So that's all we have to say about that, Marla. All right, Daniel says, for health reasons, too much candy, how common is it to let your kiddos 4X exchange their loot for things of value, such as a trip to the zoo, getting their nails done, a board game, etc.?
Dude, I love this idea.
Me too.
Like 100%. And this is actually something that Kate and I have talked about. I'm fine with like walking around with the kids, doing the Halloween thing. It's not the horror part of it that turns me off. What it is that I don't like about Halloween so much is the candy. I swear, every single year, it is Halloween that kicks off our kids being sick. November and December. Like, basically, until...
massive sugar spike intake.
Yes. In, like, their little bodies, I don't think can handle it. Can't handle it very well. That is why I'm not the biggest Halloween fan.
Yeah.
And literally, a few weeks ago, Kate and I were talking this through, and I was just like, why don't we just... dangle some, not a literal carrot, but like find an incentive. Like, how can
trade
we get
you a
them?
Carrot for your candy? Pretty sure they're gonna say no.
How can we incentivize them to not eat candy? And we haven't figured out what the exchange rate is gonna be yet, but finding a way to exchange their candy for money is something that we are 100% going to do this year.
Or experience.
And we will, well, yeah, I mean, and well, I like cash because it's the universal incentive,
yeah.
Right? They can do whatever they want with that money. Except for buy more candy with it. I'm not going to let them do that.
Well, then are you going to eat all the candy you bought, or what are you going to do?
Very good question. Because there's always like the daddy tax, right? Like, and so I think there might be a few select, only the best. will I hang on to? So I'm talking about Butterfingers, Almond Joys, Snickers, only the finest crappy candy.
You don't want the Tootsie Rolls?
But dude, all the rest is, I mean, it's all junk, right? Yeah. It's all trash and provides zero nutritional value. But Yeah, that's going to be the hard part, is actually getting rid of the candy.
Yeah.
But, what do you think?
Yeah, no, I feel similarly. So actually, I think the right incentive matters a lot. So
yes.
My daughters recently, I was told them I would buy them whatever used book they want. We'll go to the used bookstore, or I'll buy them on eBay, whatever you want. But I'll get whatever used book if you get 100 on your spelling test. So
nice.
They were getting like 80, 85s, and it was just kind of like,
ooh,
they were doing great, but like it was, if they just put in the little extra effort, I knew they could get 100. And so this has been the incentive to get them to like, now they're coming to me and they're like, Dad, let's practice spelling.
Because
they want... they want the reward at the end. And
then Joel's like, oh, all the time that I have to spend with studying with you kids now.
Right. So, yeah, I think it provides the right incentive
for
what you want your kids to value. And I think this is a great way to do it. And especially if you don't want them eating all that candy, you could like not let them go trick-or-treating or limit their trick-or-treating.
Trick-or-treating is fun.
But it's fun.
I don't disagree with that. It is literally the consumption of high fructose corn syrup and the quantities at which they do it.
So maybe you say, hey, listen, what books are you interested in? I'll buy books. One book for every 15 pieces of candy you give me, depending on how much candy they get. Something like that. But yeah,
for money, because then you can play video games.
Or money, too.
Whatever.
Yeah, exactly.
Maybe the problem is you said used books, Joel. Maybe you got to splurge on the new books.
Nah. I'm all about the used books, man. I'm like, and plus, I think I love going to these used bookstores. It's the best.
Have you been to there's a new used book reading room / bookstore above the bubble tea shop on the square?
Oh, no. I need to check that out.
It's awesome.
Okay.
Dude. Oh, your kids would love it. It's like decked out. They've got like a Harry Potter sort of section, and it's themed.
We're definitely going.
It's a good daddy daughter date combo. You get the tea and then you go upstairs, which they allow. You can take it up there.
Brilliant.
It's great.
Okay. Yeah. I'll put that on my list.
Yeah.
All right, let's go to Andrew. He says, Matt and Joel, what's your favorite scary movie?
Okay, so for me, I saw It, like the original It.
Stephen King?
Yeah, mm-hmm. Like the old one, not the new one with, what's his name? At a pretty young age, and that certainly ruined clowns for me, and sewers. So I think for the longest time, I didn't like going on walks. So I wouldn't necessarily call it a favorite, but that one had a pretty big impact on me as a 6-year-old when I saw it.
Gosh, what were your parents doing?
I think it was, I don't know. It was just, I wasn't like sitting there watching it where we're like, we're going to watch this freaking scary movie as a family.
Yeah.
It was where I was kind of passing through. Like, I didn't even watch the whole movie, but I remember seeing the clown in the sewer, and then later I remember seeing, like, the brother was looking at a photo album, and then the photo started bleeding.
Oh, gosh.
Oh, my gosh. As a little kid, dude, talk about messing you up.
I will say The Exorcist is the only really scary movie I've seen, and that was, like, probably 12 or 13 when
you sat down and watched it straight through with some friends.
My uncle, of course.
Your uncle.
It's always the uncle, right, that puts you under the worst stuff. And so I've never liked scary movies. I've never really watched
it. Or that uncle, ever since.
The scariest movie I've seen since then is probably The Village, like, from M. Night Shyamalan, which is really not all
that
scary.
That's not all, yeah.
So I don't mind a good thriller. Scary movies, I just avoid them. So I know at this time of year, a lot of people get into that. I just,
not a huge, our family, we're not into the scary movies
thing.
But all right, here, I'll get to the last one. Katie, and she had a frugal or cheap for us. Putting leftover Halloween candy in Christmas stockings. I'm going to say frugal. If that's something that you are not opposed to giving your kids. Again, maybe it's only the nicest candy. Maybe it's the Reese's peanut butter cups.
Yeah.
That feels like something. Actually, that's like the most Halloween candy there is.
Because the orange packaging.
Because the orange. But I think if there's a way you can extend it out to where you have small amounts of the candy over time, it's... Again, it's the spike of sugar consumption, of candy consumption on like over the course of 3 days.
And let's be honest, most candy is good for 6+ months. And so if you're taking it, it's less.
At least.
We're less than 2 months away from Christmas. So take some of that stuff, put it in the stockings. I'm totally fine with that. And especially depending on how young your kids are, they probably won't even know. So
Yeah, probably not.
Let's be honest. The young ones, they don't know any better. So,
and then you sit down and watch The Nightmare Before Christmas.
That's right, yeah.
Which, was that scary? I've never ever seen that.
It's not really that scary, no. Okay. It's not too bad. Although I have to decide if my kids are ready for it. I'm not sure. But thanks for all the questions. Thanks for playing along with us on this one. It was super fun.
A little more chill.
Yeah.
Shoot from the hip episode.
That's right. I like this one. But Matt, let's get back to the beer that we had on this episode. This was a Social Hour by Santa Fe Brewing. It's a hazy wheat with orange. What were your thoughts on this one?
I like this. It is exactly like it reads. It's a hazy wheat. It certainly has those orange notes coming through. And so it reads to me like more of a citrusy kind of beer.
Mm-hmm.
I guess it's the orange part of it that's the citrus. It's not like a lemony, zesty kind of beer.
No.
Yeah.
No, I thought this one too. Yeah, the wheat, the orange combo, it was nice. The beer is a bit more... It was a bit more carbonated than some beers. It almost gave it like seltzer vibe, I thought, especially like those first few sips. A nice wheat citrusy beer is like a really good beer for this time of year too, because it's laid back, it's reserved, but it's got a little bit of mouthfeel to it at the same time. So I dug
sort
this
of,
one.
Is it sort of like a Leinenkugel? Do they make some like hazy orangey wheats?
Yeah, I would say that's probably true.
If you're kind of into
the
that
shandy
more
vibes,
macro kind of stuff. So yeah, this takes Joel back to his like Shock Top. If that's a beer that you've tried at a random bar and you thought, oh, I kind of like this beer, and if you're looking to up your game, maybe Social Hour is a beer that you can try there out of Santa Fe Brewing Company.
Yeah, big thanks to our friend Bob.
Yeah, thanks,
for
Bob.
This beer and the many others he gave us. We appreciate you, Bob. Mm-hmm. All right, that's going to do it for this episode, Matt. For show notes, listeners can find those up on our website at howtomoney.com. Don't forget to sign up for the How to Money newsletter. If you haven't yet, it is chock full of great information. You can find it. It's free at howtomoney.com/newsletter. I promise you, it'll be the best newsletter you get every week in your inbox.
Chock full of nuts.
For sure.
But that's going to be it for this one, buddy. Until next time.
Best friends out.
Best friends out.
Upswell Marketing would like to remind you that when customers choose your small business, they're really choosing you. So focus on super serving your existing customers and let Upswell handle the pipeline generation of new leads and customers.
Upswell specializes in developing customized direct response campaigns and is now offering a no obligation free assessment of your current marketing strategies.
Not to mention, new customers also receive 15% off their first order when they mention that they heard about Upswell on this podcast. For more information, visit upswellmarketing.com. That's upswellmarketing.com.
From BBC Radio 4, Britain's biggest paranormal podcast is going on a road trip.
I thought in that moment, oh my God, we've summoned something from this board.
This is Uncanny USA.
He says, somebody's in the house, and I screamed.
Listen to Uncanny USA wherever you get your BBC podcasts, if you dare.
Xumo Play is your destination for endless entertainment. With a diverse lineup of 350-plus live channels, movies, and full TV series, you'll easily find something to watch right away. And the best part? It's all free. Love music? Get lost in the 90s with iHeart 90s, dance away with hip-hop beats, and more on the iHeart Radio music channels. No logins, no signups, no accounts, no hassle. So what are you waiting for? Start streaming at play.xumo.com or download from the app and Google Play stores today. All you can stream with Xumo Play.